Welcome. You're listening to the Mac Observer's Background Mode. This is your host, John Marcellaro. And this week, my guest is the co-leader at DigiDNA, Gregorio Zanin. Gregorio, welcome to the show.
Hi, John.
It's nice to have you on the show. Thank you for joining us. You are a co-leader at DigiDNA, the makers, the developers of the awesome and lately much beloved app for Mac and Windows called iMazing, which is amazing software. So I'm happy to have you on the show and hear more about this fabulous product in your career. So thank you for joining me.
And thank you for having me. It'll be lots of fun to discuss this with you.
So tell me about your background. I want to know about how you got to where you are today. Did you start thinking about being a programming expert at a young age, and how did that go? I know you were into music, so tell me a little bit about your early years.
Sure. I've always liked computers, and I was fascinated by codes since quite a young age, but I wasn't actively coding. I bought a book about C++ when I was about 10 years old.
Oh, really?
Ten
years old. Really?
Yeah, did some basic, and C++ was a bit too difficult for me, and I kind of forgot about that as I started to get into classical music. I played the piano at the time, and then really all my free time started to go into piano more than into computers.
What computers did you do C++ on? Did you have a Mac?
Well, I just read the book at that age. At that age, I had an Amiga, and I had done some basic, just a little bit. But then, basically, my love of computers kind of faded away. I was writing batch scripts just to be able to launch games and configure my... Then I had a PC when I was 11, so I was just doing just a tiny bit of scripting.
Because you were 11, you didn't know
memory.
Any better, so... That's why you had a PC. Yeah.
That was my first contact with computers. But then, for many years, it was all about music and not so much about computers anymore.
I have a theory that people who are very good at music are also very good programmers because of the logic. My wife teaches computer programming, and she notices that students who have a hard time looking at Unix command line code and interpreting what they see and making things happen. It's a lot like reading sheet music. Understanding what you're seeing on the paper or the screen and bringing it to life in the correct way so that you either have great music or the Unix command executes properly in a harmony.
Sure. I'd say you have two aspects to this. One is the language. Learning how to read music is like learning how to read a new language, a new set of symbols. So mm-hmm. there's this side to it. And the other side is pattern recognition.
Right.
When you have to learn a Beethoven sonata, you have a theme and an accompaniment, and you cannot memorize every single note. Often I hear people saying, oh, how can you remember all these notes? You know, like maybe 5,000 notes in a sonata. How can you do it? Well, you don't memorize notes, you memorize patterns. And that's somehow very close to the way you have to understand algorithmics to be an okay programmer, I guess.
Let me ask you a jackpot question here. We didn't talk about this before, but since you're a great programmer and musician, I'm going to guess that you have cats.
Not at all.
No? Okay.
By the way, I only said okay, programmer. I didn't dare say great.
Just taking a shot in the dark. So, what were you thinking about in college?
Well, then I studied music, and
so you have a music degree.
Yes, I studied in London at the Royal Academy of Music. I studied composition. And one link between the music world, a very strong link in my life between music and code, is that when I was a student, I had this idea of how I could make fractal music. And my idea was to make music into which you can zoom forever and to translate that scale parameter of fractals in speed. So in effect, it would be music that would slow down forever or accelerate forever. And I had this idea of how I could make it happen, except it wasn't performable by musicians, and I didn't know how to code very well at the time. So I kind of forgot about it, and only 5 years later, when I started coding seriously, suddenly I realized that I finally had the skills to actually do that, and I went along and did it. It was my biggest project as a beginner coder, and taught me all sorts of things about programming.
Pretty cool. Well, you're in Geneva, Switzerland now. What brought you from London to Geneva? Was that a direct thing?
I was born in Geneva, and then I studied in London. So I'm actually, I was actually born and bred here.
So it was just a trip off to London to study music and then returning home.
Yes, I stayed on a couple of years after finishing my bachelor. Worked as a composer a bit over there, and then got heartsick, the mountains, the lake.
Oh, yeah.
Headed back home.
Sort of like Colorado for us. Yeah. Yeah. I have a friend who wanted to become, when I was in graduate school, he wanted to become a concert pianist. And he said the pressure and the tension was just too great. So he backed off from being a concert pianist to something that was a lot easier, theoretical physicist.
Mm. Yeah, that's quite fun.
So I'm going to ask you how you fell in with Jerome and the group, and how the DigiDNA got started. Tell me about that.
Yeah, interestingly, it's also linked to music. Well, my falling in with them is linked to music. DigiDNA existed since 2008, and they were making at the time, they started making a tool to get your music from your iPod back to your computer. Oh. Because iTunes would only sync it from the computer to the iPod.
But I'm what seeing if you some lose? Seeds here.
Yeah, absolutely. They had this tool that existed actually just before the first iPhone was released. So DigiDNA was actually making tools in that environment since just before the iPhone was released, nearly 10 years ago now. And I was starting at the time my coding passion. I was just coding music apps. When the iPad came out, I really felt that I wanted to code my own instrument, basically. I wanted to touch that gorgeous touchscreen and to make music with it. So that's how I really got seriously into coding. And then I got a part-time job as a programmer in a music apps setting for a small company who wanted to make educational music apps. I did that part-time, and at the same time I was making that instrument called UFace Plus for a networked iPad. And I showed Jerome that instrument. I did him a little performance with their iPads and mine, and just spatialized sound, improvised little performance. And then he just asked me if I wanted to join, which I did.
You know, that's a common theme I've seen in my life and I've seen in the guests, is you do something really cool with passion and you create something great, and then you show it to someone and they say, you know, we could use somebody like you. That happens over and over again. How did DigiDNA name or get started? I know you weren't there when they started, but do you have any recollection of how the name DigiDNA came about?
Yeah, I think it was pretty random. They were looking for a name, and digital, and how could we get a name that both suggests the digital world and at the same time the human? And DigiDNA was a pretty self-evident choice.
So you could be like Phil Schiller and say, coding is in our DNA, right?
Yeah. Very simple.
All right, so today you guys make a pretty amazing program called iMazing. Tell me about iMazing, about how it was conceived and what it does.
iMazing wasn't so much conceived as it evolved into what it is today. Its roots lie in Discade and PixAid and TuneAid, which were all these small utilities which had one function only. TuneAid was to recover your music from your iPod, and PixAid was to extract photos. Discade was to use your first iPhone as a USB drive. Then all these utilities merged into one. And basically, they all have the same goal. It's just to expand the control we have over our iOS gizmos. Apple loves to say it just works. And it just works when you don't need to do anything but what Apple provides for you. If you need to go a bit further, sometimes it just works isn't enough. You have to see the nitty-gritty, which is more complex, and you need to access the raw files, which are stored on your phone. And we provide that. We always shift and adapt with iOS alongside iOS to just try to provide a little more, a little more access.
You describe yourself as plumbers.
Yes, in that sense, we're kind of plumbers because we cannot really decide our own destiny. We have to fix basically what users see as broken in Apple's ecosystem as much as we can. So just we live in that spread between what is possible and what Apple offers. And that spread is constantly shifting. So that's the real challenge and what makes this job so interesting, that we always have to react. We always have to adapt to new iOS versions, new iTunes versions, new devices. And yeah.
Do you get a lot of feedback from customers who say, you know, I really can't do what I want to do in iTunes. Can you guys fix iMazing so it does this or that? And then,
sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Now, the big thing is apps, app management being kicked out of iTunes 12.7.
Right.
And iMazing can still install apps, but we can't connect to the App Store and download your apps. Or maybe we can, but we don't know yet. We can talk about that again once we've researched the subject a bit more. But we don't do any, we never hack anything, but maybe it can be okay to connect to the App Store and to download apps you've already purchased. So we're looking into that now. I can't make any promises because it's very hard to do, but perhaps.
Well, if you have an app that you like, maybe it's 64-bit and it's worth keeping, but it's no longer in the App Store for some reason, and you back that up to iMazing and it stays there, then you can always reload it again from a backup, right? So you don't have to worry about the fact that you've deleted it from your phone and it's not in the store and you can't get it again. Is that how that works?
Sadly, it used to work this way until iOS 9. We could extract the IPA package from the phone, but since iOS 9 that isn't possible anymore. So the only way to get access to an IPA, which we can install then on your device, is to download it with iTunes, and now iTunes doesn't do it either. So that's the biggest problem users are facing now. Users are not happy about having to re-download systematically all their apps. If they have 5 devices, they have to download the same 2 GB game 5 times.
Why do you think Apple did that? Do you think they did it for security or to maintain the latest version or just to simplify iTunes?
There are 2 reasons. One is security, to force people to download the latest updates. Mm-hmm. And second reason, I wrote a blog post about that when iOS 9 came out. It's still on our blog at iamazing.com/blog. It's caused also by a new feature called app slicing. Basically, iTunes tries to optimize the size of apps by only packaging assets which are relevant to your current screen size. So if you have an iPhone SE, for example, you won't get all the PNG files and all the assets that are meant for an iPad Pro.
I remember that now. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
So that's why they ditched, I think, app extraction from the device itself. Because if you extract an app from an iPhone SE, you can't install it on an iPad Pro. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't contain the assets.
Was that but announced from, app slicing? Was that announced at WWDC 2016?
15, I believe.
15.
Because it was iOS 9.
Right.
But when you download the app from iTunes, when you used to download it from iTunes 12.6, it's a universal package which you can install on every device type. So I don't know. Why did they remove that from iTunes? Apple Configurator still does it. Why does iTunes not? Yeah, to simplify it and to push people to have their apps up to date, I think.
All right. Cool. That's great insight. Thank you for sharing that with us. Hey, it's time to take a break. When we come back, I want to ask you about the team a little bit and some more about iMazing and some of the side apps. But first, we need to take a commercial break. Folks, we'll be back in 60 seconds. Stay with us. I'm chatting with Gregorio Zanin.
Hello there, all you fabulous background mode listeners. I'm Kelly Gamont with the Mac Observer, and I just want to say a few words about how you can support all the things we do. If you're thinking about buying something from Apple, Amazon, or Mac Mall, just go to the Mac Observer's homepage where we have a section called Support TMO. Or you can just enter macobserver.com/Apple Store, all one word, and that will take you to our special page for Apple and our other affiliates. If you make a purchase from one of our partners this way, the Mac Observer receives a small compensation for sending business their direction. Pretty cool, right? And you don't pay a penny more. This small fee from our affiliates helps us continue to bring you TMO's daily news, reviews, tips, how-tos, and podcasts like this one. So the next time you're thinking about an online purchase, come to TMO's homepage and support the Mac Observer. Thanks. Back to you, John.
Thank you, Kelly. I'm talking to one of the co-leaders at DigiDNA, Gregorio Zanin. So tell me a little bit about your team. How big is it, and where are you guys all located?
So the core team, the dev team, is in Geneva, and it's three of us. So our lead developer is MacMate. It's his screen name. And then there's Jerome and me. Then we have help from outside resources. So we have some web development done by someone who's in Australia, and we have level one tech support, which is done by a really very nice company in Kiev called Support Your App. They focus exclusively on providing really high quality tech support. And so that's that happens in Kiev. And then we also have a PR PR girl who's called Marina, and who used to work for Riedel, and who works for us now, and who handles all the communications for us. So yeah, that's about the size of the team for now.
Cool. I wanted to ask you if there were any difficulties converting iMazing with High Sierra coming out, having come out.
There was nothing which really stood out. APFS is the big new thing which can break apps. And it can break apps only if you're not cautious enough with naming of files, if you mix cases, for example. And we were quite rigorous about our naming of files and assets, so we didn't see any issues with that.
Are there any issues with HAIC, especially on Windows?
Oh, yeah, of course. Basically, the new Apple file format for images is HEIF, High Efficiency Image Format, and it produces files with an HEIC extension only if you have an iPhone 7 and above, and iOS 11 installed. And these HEIC files, you can't use them on Windows, and you can't use them on older versions of macOS neither. But as long as you stay in Apple's ecosystem, everything is fine, because Apple will convert for you to JPEG. iMazing is not an official part of Apple's ecosystem, and the way we access your data, we access the raw files, so we had to deal with these HEIC files. So with iMazing, we offer two things. You can convert HEIC files to JPEG now when you extract, and that happens behind the scenes automatically.
So that's what gets backed up to your Mac or your PC, the JPEG?
Yeah. So if you the backup will still contain the original files, but if you extract an image from your camera roll or from your albums with iMazing, if it's an HEIC file, it will automatically get converted to JPEG if you're not running at least High Sierra.
Oh, okay. So there's a lot of things to attend to as a developer, keeping track of all that.
Yes. Yes, and that wasn't exactly easy, converting HEIC to JPEG. It's a brand new format, and we had to dig into some ISO standards and to understand what and how was happening there.
Is there an iMazing version specifically for High Sierra so that users have to upgrade?
I think on Mac it's 2.4.2. Yeah, starting at 2.4.2, you'll get automatic conversion from HEIC to JPEG. The other interesting thing is that if you're running anything less than High Sierra and you want to access these HEIC files, there's a setting in iMazing where you can force iMazing to just respect the original file format. So if you need to access these raw data files, you can. Whereas if you use the Photos app, for example, your images will automatically get converted to JPEG and you won't access the HEIC.
Okay.
Except if you use iCloud Photo Library. It's very complex the way it's done. Imagine there's so many caveats. It's very, 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 very complex the way Apple has tried to structure this so that no one gets left out. And they did an awesome job about that with that. But there's a lot of hidden complexity. As always with Apple, it just works, hides hugely complex issues. What happens when you have an iPhone 7 and your HEIC photo gets synced to iCloud Photo Library, and then your iCloud Photo Library syncs to your Mac, which is an older Mac? Who converts to what format and how? And how does that all get synced? It's not a simple problem to solve at all.
Well, you guys tread a fine line there between dealing with the complexities and surfacing the functionality the way that pleases the user. That's a big challenge.
It is, and we can never satisfy everyone, but we try, and we're more complex in many ways than this vanilla Apple software, but we also provide a more direct access.
You told me the other day that you're not in the App Store. Explain to the listeners why you can't be in the Mac App Store.
The very first reason is sandboxing. Apps in the Mac App Store are not allowed to access any parts of your file system, so they cannot access your backups, for example. If you take Parallels isn't in the App Store neither. They just couldn't be. It's not possible. And iMazing is in that same category. It's a utility that needs deeper access to your system.
So the way to get the app is to come directly to your website?
Yes, absolutely.
And there's a 30-day free trial, right?
It's not 30 days, actually. For over a year now, we've removed the time limits. That was quite a fun commercial test we did. We thought, are people really buying because of that time limit? And we just removed it, and the sales were exact same. So some things are free. You can browse your data, browse your backups, make backups. That's completely free. And then when you need to export more than a certain amount of data, or if you need to restore a backup, that will be paid.
Amazing. Pardon the pun. So because you're not in the Mac App Store, you have to do things a little different because you're sort of on the fringes, as you said before. People have to know about you. How are you managing that? Are you doing it through advertising, or how are you getting the word out?
Well, we do some advertising via AdWords, Google, and we try to do less of that now because it's quite expensive and the return isn't so great. And we do sponsorship, of course. As you know, we've been sponsors of Mac Observer for a while. So sponsorship, advertising, and since a few months, we've begun to release some small free utilities. That's working quite well for us to get the word around that we make quality software and offer some smaller programs for free. We have iMazing Mini, which is automatic backups. So it uses the same backup engine as iMazing, and that is completely free. You can just set it up, automatic backups daily, every 2 days, whatever rocks your boat. And it will connect via Wi-Fi to your phone and back it up to your chosen location whenever you want it to. And that we offer completely for free. And recently, we just released a small HEIC to JPEG conversion utility called iMazing HEIC Converter, very original name. And that is proving quite popular as well. We're getting a lot of traffic from that, people wanting to deal with these HEIC files. And they find that there's a free tool to do it. So, of course, that makes the life easier.
Jeff Gamet told me that he bumped into you, I think, or at least was aware of you guys at, was it WWDC?
Mm-hmm.
Where you had instantly adopted some of the iOS betas on your phones. confident that if anything went wrong with the iOS 11 beta, that you could return your phone to exactly the former state. Is that a correct interpretation of what Jeff told me?
Yeah, it's quite true. All of us, well, the developers, all three of us immediately installed the betas on our private phones. We do that every year, actually. It's also a form of daring ourselves. If we master this environment the way we believe we do and the way we believe our customers should believe we do, then we have to just go for it and install these betas and rely on our backups.
So it's like Time Machine. Your beta hose is up. You don't like the way it's working. So you just connect it to your Mac with iMazing, and then you say, I want to go back to this particular date and backup. And your phone is exactly like it was before. Is that right?
If you've installed an iOS update, you will need first to downgrade iOS to recover exactly the state your phone was in. It really depends on what changed between the versions of iOS. But in general, you can recover pretty much the exact state without even downgrading. Basically, restoring a backup upstream to a higher version of iOS is always much easier than downstream. Downstream is often impossible. You can't restore an iOS 11 backup to an iOS 10 phone, for example.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And then there comes a time when they stop signing their certificates anyway.
Yes. Well, as long as iOS is in beta, they'll always be signing, of course, the current versions. So that's never a problem. If you have your 10.3.2 backup early June, you update to the 11 beta. If things go wrong, you can always just reinstall everything. And yeah.
So you told me that you're working on a Windows version. I'm a little confused about that. Has there been a Windows version of iMazing for a long time, and is it just recently you're working on the HEIF stuff?
There's been an iMazing for Windows since iMazing was released. iMazing was Diskade before.
Okay.
It became iMazing in 2014. We just changed the name because Diskade just sounded like a disk utility, repair your hard drive or something. And so we changed the name for iMazing. And Diskade already was both Windows and Mac. And the HEIC conversion utility, we released a Windows version just 5 days after the Mac version.
So your team there in Geneva, you develop both the Mac OS and the Windows version. That's just three of you. That's a pretty broad talent base amongst you guys.
We have a cross-platform toolkit. Basically, all the backend, the engine behind iMazing works cross-platform in C++.
Oh.
And then it's just a UI that we wrap, and we have to basically mirror between Mac and Windows.
Are you able to tell me what tool that is? Because I know there's several cross-platform development systems.
Oh, we don't use any. We write native UI. We use Xcode, Cocoa to write the Mac UI, and then we use Xcode, Visual Studio, and XAML to write the Windows UI. So it's native UI. We don't use any cross-platform frameworks. It's just the C++ code that is compiles both on Mac and Windows.
Oh, okay. I understand now. So how do you like developing on Mac versus Windows? A lot of developers have told me they have strong opinions about developing in Xcode versus Windows.
Mm. I'm a Mac guy. I really like the Xcode environment, and also our tools are Macs. So it's we use iPhones. We're in the Mac environment. We're more at ease in that environment. Mm. But Visual Studio is a very, very decent environment to develop in, and it's in some cases it's much easier than Xcode to develop UI. There's a whole system of grid, which lets you write balanced, nicely spaced out UI very easily on the PC. Whereas on Mac, auto layout is super powerful, but it's very difficult to master.
How do you deal with proliferation of iPhones? Do you guys have to buy one of every model for testing? Or do you distribute the load amongst the team members? How does that work?
iOS works just the same, whatever the iPhone model. So we don't need to get one of each. Most important, we need to update our phones to try the betas. And we need to have, if anything is truly new, for example, in the iPhone 10, there'll be some truly new features which might have an impact on how images are recorded. So, and that's why we absolutely need an iPhone 10.
I need one too.
Yes, it's a very convenient way to, you know, order three for each one of us.
Well, I think we about covered everything. Is there anything you want to tell me about? Are you working on something, another freebie that you want to talk about, or any other news you want to contribute, or anything we missed?
Well, it's the Mac Observer, so I'm not sure you'll be so interested in knowing that we're working on iMazing Mini for Windows right now. But no, we look forward to all our users' feedback regarding iMazing's role in the Apple ecosystem. And we always listen to the feedback and try to you know, evolve as much as possible in the same direction that our users would like to go in.
I don't remember the details of your website. I assume there's a support page where people can go in and send you feedback on features they'd like and stuff like that, right?
Of course. Sure. And in the app, there's a send feedback menu. So it's right there in the main menu, license, send feedback, or bug reports. And you can we actually read every single message.
Excellent. Well, we love the work that you've been doing, and full disclosure, you are a sponsor of Jeff's Daily Observations, but in light of that, we thought it'd be great to get some background on you and hear more about your company and your career. So thank you very much for joining me on the show. It was a pleasure.
Thank you very much for having me, John.
If the listeners would like to contact you directly or the company, how can they do that?
We have a Twitter at DigiDNA. We have a Facebook, DigiDNA as well. And iMazing.com/support. You also have a direct link to contact us.
All right. Well, again, thank you very much for being on the show, Gregorio. It was a pleasure meeting you and getting to hear the history of iMazing and DigiDNA. Thank you.
Thank you, John.
Listeners, I hope you enjoyed the show. We'll see you again next week on the Mac Observer's Background Mode.